Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. This has been an anxious past few months for many in Tulsa's arts community. A decision by the mayor's office in April to eliminate most of the city's funding for the arts in the first preliminary budget caught the arts community off guard. Proposals to eliminate staff positions at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center Trust, the Waterworks Community Arts Center, the Heller and Clark Theater galvanized supporters and quickly spurred the city council to oppose those cuts. Now, with the final budget in place, it's July, a new fiscal year, most, but not all, of the personnel cuts have been restored. The PAC Trust, Waterworks, and the Clark Theater will continue to offer productions, events, and classes. But the Heller Theater, which coincidentally won the Tulsa Award for Theater Excellence this past year, the Tate Award, for their production of School for Lies, will be dark this season. All arts programs are on notice that this may simply be a one-year reprieve. So this begs the question, what are the responsibilities and obligations of a city in the area of cultural engagement and support for the arts? And is it feasible in an era of strapped budgets and competing priorities? Well, we'll hear one answer to those questions from Ken Busby, Executive Director of the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa, who's also part of a task force which is examining these very questions for future budget years. He joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Ken Busby, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. It's great to be back.
Now that the dust of the Tulsa City budget has settled and most of the arts funding has been restored this
year.
Yes,
we're very grateful.
For a year, what should the city be looking at as far as its support of the arts in this coming year, in which I think by some of the councilors' designation and certainly the mayor's designation is a year of transition for the arts as far as the city funding? I mean, it's been 1 year guarantees from what I can see.
Right, and that's basically it. And so we've been given a year to figure it out. And what's this going to look like going forward? And so there are a number of discussions going on with the mayor's office, with city council, among groups. I'm currently the chairman of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center Trust. We're having discussions and just trying to get our heads wrapped around how this can go forward. At the same time, really, from my another hat that I wear, from my role as the executive director of the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa, really also trying to help citizens, trying to help our government understand the role that government does need to play in the arts, and the idea that there needs to be some sort of mechanism by which a city invests in itself by investing in the arts and not always looking for another group, a private firm, a private somebody to come in and save the day. So it's sort of a balancing that we're trying to do, saying, yes, we know we have to find another path, but we also know that there is a role for city to play.
Let me pin you down on what you perceive is the city's future path as the stakeholders and people in power would think of it. At this point, are we transitioning to seeing the city not involved in direct arts funding, or are they looking for another avenue in which the city can explore?
That's a good question. I think from what we're gathering at this juncture, the city will continue to play a role in arts and cultural life of the community. There is a genuine understanding and sense that this is important, that the arts do matter. But it's always then comes down to funding priorities. And when you're looking at police and fire and public safety and streets and sewers and all of that, and then say, oh, and don't forget the arts, it's easy to forget the arts because it's such a small percentage of the budget to begin with. It's easy to lop that off and, oh, it doesn't really have any impact. And then when you start looking at the ramifications in terms of workforce development, economic development, job creation, all of these things, it's like, oh, maybe that's having a bigger role than we thought. So right now, the city, both from the city council side and from the mayor's side, are really trying to figure out how best they can forge a path that is sustainable funding so that we're not always in crisis mode each year as the budget comes around to be done, but also then looking at a sustainability model that will allow, as I see it, more private investment to support what it's doing, but not relinquishing its role.
But really, when you think of what's happening arts-wise on city properties, mm-hmm. that means Guthrie Green, the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, it's nearly all the private sector.
Right. And and without the private sector, we would be in a world of hurt, just quite literally. So, we're very thankful for the private sector to step in. But again, one of the things that I try to underscore is that there is a role for government to play, that it's not just about control issues, or it's not about which exhibits are going to be funded or things of that level, but just that there has to be a basic understanding that the cultural and artistic life of a community is important to the citizens, to the visitors, and so forth, and that the city needs to play a role in that and not abdicate its responsibilities, that it can't always rely on the private sector to always step up to the plate, that the city does have some fiduciary responsibility and some real role to play in the life of the city.
Now, in a lot of cities where you see that commitment, a lot of times there'll be a cultural bureau as a part of the city. They're actively putting on festivals. They're hosting events. They're providing logistical support. And, of course, the city does that for arts events outside in our city, too.
Sure.
I have to admit, when this all came down at the 1st of May, I was or the end of April, I think, the last day of April.
Right.
I was on a plane to New Orleans for the New Orleans Jazz Fest, and where I saw a city that is utterly integrated with the arts. Now,
absolutely.
Granted, it is a huge tourist city,
of course.
And it has this heritage. But they did things like on the first original sale of artwork by New Orleans artists, there's no city sales tax paid.
Perfect.
I mean, these are really concrete steps that sort of integrate the arts within the fabric of the community. And I'm reading on a smartphone that the city of Tulsa is getting out of the arts business,
right,
pretty much. So I guess my question is, what is the role of a city in the arts? What are other cities doing? Obviously, we're not going to have a system like New Orleans, which has this huge arts budget. But there's something in between what the city of Tulsa is doing and most other cities.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things you mentioned was like an Office of Cultural Affairs or something. That's one of the reasons that I think we're in some ways lucky that we don't have one in Tulsa is because it would also be probably the first thing cut. And so it's like if we put it there, then what's going to happen when it's gone, or if a particular mayoral administration is not as supportive as another? And so in some ways, having a private organization like us, the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa, 501c3, we can advise and assist the mayor's office, the city council, and that's what we do, and we're called upon to do that. But we're not then subject to the will of the city budget to then be gone and then have nothing to support it. But other cities, when you look at cities like Kansas City, like Dallas, and this is not being denigrating at all, but even a city like Joplin, Missouri, who has really been working on revitalizing its downtown, has been really working through the arts, using arts and culture as a way in music to really drive that redevelopment of its community. And Louisville and Chicago. And so you can go large, you can go smaller, but cities see it more as an investment. And one of the challenges that I think we face in Tulsa is a lot of the city leadership looks at the world as it's an expense instead of an investment. And those two words are really different and really distinctive, and they're for a reason. Of course, we have expenses, and we have to pay our bills, and we have to balance our budget and all of those things. But if you look at the return on investment, which a business person looks at, then you say, well, gosh, if we spend this money on public funding of the arts and what that looks like, whether it's more programming at Guthrie Green, or it's supporting concerts in the parks, or classes, or more public art in general that benefits anyone that walks by or happens to see it. If you look at it as an investment that people, because a community that has a strong arts and cultural presence, is more attractive to employers who bring in people that want to transform their lives by moving here, bringing their families. It generates jobs. It's an economic stimulus. And so then it's looked at more as an investment because the return is so much greater. It's not just the expense of what it costs to put on that program or put on that exhibit or buy that piece of art. It's created all these jobs. It's made our city better. It's been more attractive now to the creative types who've moved into our city, who are buying our homes, moving into condos, eating in restaurants, participating in our schools and participating in the life of the community. And it really is an infusion of energy and economic development and stimulus and so forth into that economy and into that community that really is transformative. And that's what cities that get it, if you think of cities like Portland or Seattle or New Orleans or whatever, that they get that. And I'm not saying that their budgets are easy either. They have challenges and they have to balance it, but the arts are not first on the list to be cut. It's one of those things like, what else can we do, or where else can we tighten some belts? Because we know that this is driving cultural tourism, which makes a huge impact on our community and those kinds of things. And that's what Tulsa needs to do, because we have this wealth of art and culture and music in this community. We're known for it, but we don't invest in it like other cities do. And if we just did a little more investing, I think you'd be amazed at the economic return that we would get and the life that it would happen.
And really, there's two different types of investments, too. It's one where you bring in musicians, mm-hmm. and one is you nurture your homegrown talent. And this is something that you and I have talked about this in the past,
sure.
but this is something our city has lagged at, mm-hmm. and is investing in their homegrown talent. It's a lot of times it's let's bring in
right.
X or Y,
right.
instead of investing in the local homegrown talent, because really when you do that, the money actually stays in the community,
yeah.
and it flows through.
Absolutely. And this is not...
And the smart cities understand that. It's never about creating national music acts or visual arts things. It's
sure.
about doing things that support your local artistic community, cultural community.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right, the smart cities do that. They're not ever putting down the national acts are great. And when you bring in big acts to the BOK Center, it's awesome. And it's great to have it. And it's great to expose our community to that level of talent and those kinds of things. Celebrity attractions and doing shows at the Performing Arts Center. All of those things have value too. But when you correctly point out, when you nurture the homegrown, now you're growing it from the grassroots up and you're helping them make a name, and you're saying, you know, we believe in our community. We believe in the artists and the cultural people in our community, and we want to really, see that flourish. And when you do, then yes, every dollar then is staying at home, and that's a huge boon to the community.
My guest today is Ken Busby, the executive director of the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa. He's also the chair of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center Trust. And we're talking about the city's commitment to the arts. Now, the dust has settled on the budget for this coming year.
Yes.
And most of the arts cuts have been restored, although the Tate Award-winning Heller Theater, they won the Tate Award this year for the best theatrical production of the year.
Yes, they did. Well-deserved.
They will be taking a year hiatus. There will be no, as far as we know at this point, there's not going to be any Heller Theater productions. The Clark Theater for Youth,
yes,
which is also very highly decorated.
Right, and it's going to continue.
It's going to continue.
Right. And so right now they're doing sort of a self-examination, if you will, of what they can be, what they can do within a limited budget, if you will. And the idea is that after a year, they will then reemerge as a leaner, meaner, engaging entity in the community, but that they're going to take this time to really evaluate and really try to determine what they can do to be sustainable, if that's a fair way to put it.
And sustainable without complete city subsidy?
Yes. I mean, they're looking at a potential on the private side as well. What sort of influx? Is there a balance? Can we have some level of commitment from the city and then match that perhaps with a private investment that then allows us to continue our program as it is. But it's not going to look exactly like it does today.
Yeah, and the Heller Theater is somewhat of an outlier for what most cities do in supporting an actual city theater company, adult theater company. Now, the Clark Theater seems to be something that should be in the wheelhouse of most cities. It's a youth program. It's about giving kids an outlet after school, weekends,
right. mm-hmm.
and providing them with this great performing. And, of course, they're doing outstanding work, too.
They do. Clark does a super job. So the Heller is more of an anomaly in the great scheme of how most cities are structured. I think it's one of those that just sort of has been there and sort of got grandfathered in, and somebody liked it years ago, and it just sort of remained.
And, of course, at the time when it was formed, we have to remember that most of the nonprofit theater companies or profit theater companies at that time were doing very standard fare, and Heller was doing very adventurous and has always done adventurous fare, supporting local playwrights, giving new playwrights sometimes some of their first productions.
Absolutely, which is absolutely critical, but then that's where the public funding sort of as it gets challenge. Well, I mean, should they be doing that or should it be the more standard fare? But then also finding the private side to do something that's a little out of the norm sometimes can backfire too. So Heller, as I said, has been that anomaly that that's really promoted the local playwright and promoted the local talent and for that reason, because they pushed the envelope and because they've done not just mainstream, really is deserving of that. And to, in a lot of ways, that's the best kind of thing that public support can do, because then it's the broad public. It's not just dependent upon one person who happens to like it this day and somebody that doesn't like it tomorrow. Here it is. We're putting it out there, and here's a chance for you to expand your horizons.
Yeah. Now, the waterworks in the arts class out in West Tulsa, mm-hmm. that's been restored.
Thankfully, yes. Yeah. We have our staff in place.
And the PAC Trust, which you head up as the chair of the trust, the proposed cuts there have not materialized this year.
Correct.
But how is the trust responding to the fact that, in fact, the directors and the people who really make the trust productions go were on the chopping block? How was the trust responding to this?
With great alarm and great concern, because it was a little surprising to us that it happened.
It was surprising to every arts group because it came out of the blue.
Right. And so, you first of all, we were trying to get our heads wrapped around, well, what does this mean and what does this look like? And so first thoughts are we looked at the endowment that we have that allows us to provide discounts to groups that use our facility and bring in acts that might not otherwise happen. That's a lot of the role of the trust. Our first thought is, okay, so if we have no staff, how are we going to make this work? Is there enough in our reserves, and not reserves, but our endowment, that if we pull that money, could we? And what we finally looked at was like, okay, that's not going to work because that's going to take all of our money just to have staff, and then we still have no money to do programming if we use all of our resources for that. So that's not going to work. So then it's lots of conversations with city council and the mayor. It's like, what can we do to figure this out? And then working with John Scott at the PAC and so forth, we found a way to put it all together. But again, it's that one-year hiatus, the 1 year that we have to sort of say, okay, but you're going to have to find another solution down the road. And so to that end, we formed an ad hoc committee, Stanton Doyle from the George Kaiser Family Foundation, who also serves on the PAC Trust, has put together an ad hoc committee, and several of us are looking at models, ways to go forward. What can we do? How can the trust play a role? What do we need to look at? Different kind of management structure, whatever, in order to or some sort of possible, well, the continued relationship with the city, but how do we do this to sort of lock in a level of commitment in perpetuity that is not on the chopping block every year? Because when you think about a city, when you think about when the Performing Arts Center was opened in 1977, it was designed as everybody's place. It was designed as a home for the performing arts. And you just can't imagine, well, gosh, if we have no staff, does it go dark? Do we just not have it anymore? And then that just totally changes the makeup of our community. And all of a sudden, it's not as great a place to live anymore because we don't have that. And so the trust members are really scrutinizing, what's the best formula to go forward to make sure that we can be here for the long term, that the PAC will be here for the long term, and that we will have the staffing in place to make it all work and continue to play that vital role in the community. So we are, as I said, an ad hoc committee is formed, and we're looking at models in other cities. How are other cities doing what we do? And then we're going to be making a very strong case to the city council and the mayor over the next few months, and we'll be bringing them into meetings and so forth to say, okay, this is what we think our best options are. This is the role that you will need to continue to play, because the trust itself and the PAC, we can't take it all on. There isn't the reserves and everything to be able to do that. So the city's going to have to play a role in a positive way. They should. And we're just going to help them understand why they need to play this role and how best that they're going to be able to do that for us going forward. And then here's the level of commitment that we'll make to help you bridge any gaps and make this all work. But what we don't want is every year to be in the boat where, oh, and by the way, six more jobs are on the chopping block and we all have to scramble to try to fix it. We've got to stop that.
Let me bring up the possible solution that the city has turned to many times and was thwarted, not this past year, but a year ago. Which was when the last problem was when you look at the cultural assets of the city, mm-hmm. the zoo,
right.
privatized.
Right.
Gilcrease, privatized through the University of Tulsa.
Right. Which is
BOK and the Cox Convention Center, privatized. Mm-hmm. There was a groundswell of opposition to a possible privatization of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center.
Right.
Thinking that It really needed city staff to be able to do that local side that, it, as you mentioned, is a part of the trust, which is providing discounts and providing support and expertise for local tenants that use the facility, and to make sure that they're able to get dates in which they're able to thrive.
Right.
Because the you could have the PAC running all four theaters practically every night of the year. Practically,
yeah.
And
you could.
So there was concern that if it was privatized, all the good dates would go for vendors that could pay money, and the local groups at the discount would get the bad dates.
Right.
Is that still a possibility out there?
Well, anything's possible, Rich. you know, I can't say what. We don't like to use the P word, and only because it does send shockwaves through people. Oh my gosh, you know, what's going to happen? And what we are trying to avoid is any kind of scenario like you just painted, because local has to come first. I mean, therein lies the bottom line. So as this ad hoc committee is working, as we're talking with city council and the mayor's office and so forth, I'm going to be honest. We are open to any possibility that helps stabilize the funding and helps stabilize the organization going forward. So we're not taking anything off the table. We're looking at everything. But what we have found, and I don't want to name the cities or anything yet that we're looking at, but what we have found are some interesting arrangements, contracts, and so forth that really have allowed the city and the Performing Arts Center organization itself to really maintain that local control through a very, very tightly worded contract and so forth that really does preserve the local and puts it first. And so we've been there's been a lot of research being done, lots of conversations, lots of emails back and forth, looking for those models that would allow us that kind of control and yet also then have that private investment or the privatization, if you will, the P word I hate to use, that would allow us a stronger management position and really could ensure a more successful program, more generation of revenue, so that we don't have this issue again. And so we are looking at that.
As you're doing looking at various cities, is this a pretty common situation for cities today?
Yes, and more so. It's becoming more and more.
I mean, I would think most cities are a lot like Tulsa. They depend on sales tax.
Absolutely. Although, interestingly enough, we are the largest city in the country that is dependent on sales tax.
First and foremost.
First and foremost, the first city, with the largest city left that hasn't figured out some other way and of course, this is going to take state level work and then federal level work to allow us to either collect revenues on, you know,
internet.
And that's a big one that would really all help our bottom line right now. I always tell people, I really don't think most people are trying to save money on sales tax on the internet. They want it because they can find it on the computer and have it delivered to their home and so forth. And paying sales tax would be really easy if it was just collected without having to, you know, make my own extra effort to remember to fill out the form and turn it in. That said, though, you know, you can look really broad. Now I'll scare people when I say this, but you can look at cities that have looked at the broader idea of city-county government and forming that kind of thing, where there's some cost savings potential and so forth. That's going to scare every listener that's hearing this now. but there are really ways to look at these things in a broader context that would really benefit us long term. But all those solutions, you know, finding new funding mechanisms and so forth, take time. So we're trying to do some stuff now to sort of get us there, always with our mind on what are other ways we could do this? Could we get is there a bond issue that could help support? Are there other things we could do? Is there vision money through a future vision project that could go into a fund that would allow us to make this all work? So we're trying to look at every possible aspect that's within our legal means to do it as the world stands now.
Now, right now you have an ad hoc committee that's looking at this. The city has also announced they're going to form a task force on the arts to look at these same issues.
Right.
Are you a part of that, and has anything happened on that yet?
Nothing really happened so far on that. We've had a couple conversations with Councillor Phil Lakin and Councillor G.T. Bynum. And it looks like there's going to be a good possibility we'll just blend the two together and look at this in a broader context, because we don't need two efforts going on at the same time. And we had already established our ad hoc committee just because of what was going on. So we said, well, hey, that's great that you want to do this, and we agree that there's got to be a solution found. Why don't we work together instead of two strains going? So that's what it looks like will happen late this summer into the fall. We'll probably get together as a group after, you know, summer, people are traveling, things happen. So we're just going to keep going and then bring our groups together and figure out a longer-term solution that will please everyone, we hope.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with that effort. It's going to be a very interesting fall and
it should
winter.
Be. Stay tuned for more.
Getting back to the PAC Trust for a moment. Now, as we mentioned, the eliminating of the staff positions hadn't occurred for this current fiscal year.
We're very grateful.
Give us a sense of what – I mean, they're really the people that – put on the shows that the PAC Trust directly sponsors.
Correct.
They also help administer with your board discounts and assistance mm-hmm. to other arts groups. Give us a sense of what those positions do as far as making events that Tulsa citizens can go to happen at the PAC.
Sure. Well, I mean, probably the biggest example that we're in right now is Summer Stage. I mean, that is totally the staff's responsibility between all of them that they make that happen.
They make recommendations.
They make recommendations the trust approves. But, uh-huh. I mean, we certainly rely on their guidance because they're the ones that do this daily and know all the acts and know all the organizations and know what's going to, you know, and they put together a season and that we bless and then it goes forward. But without that staff, that doesn't happen. The Imagination Days, all the family programming, all that would just go away because there'd be nobody to do it.
And probably the other thing that people don't realize that all the events that are happening at the Guthrie Green is coordinated through those people at the Trust.
Absolutely. They coordinate with the Guthrie Green folks and Tulsa Roots Music and a lot of the things that come together are all interconnected and all play a role in making that happen. And so all of a sudden it's like, well, if they don't do it, who's going to? And do you hire other staff privately somewhere to do this and make this programming happen? Or, how does it happen? So it's a much broader impact than I think than the general public would ever see, because a lot of this happens behind the scenes. I mean, you go to Summer Stage, or you go to this, or you go to the Guthrie Green and see a thing. Somebody made that happen. Somebody booked that group, got them in there. They got on stage. Somebody ran the lights. Somebody ran the sound. And all of a sudden, if those people aren't there, then that doesn't happen.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll see what the city commitment to the arts will be coming up in 2015. This is a year of decisions to be made.
Right. And we're going to help them make the best decisions possible and make our case loudly and strongly and fairly about the investment that they need to make, that the city needs to make, in order for this to be the community that we all enjoy and all participate in.
All right. Ken Busby, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rich. It's been fun.
Ken Busby is the Executive Director of the Arts and Humanities Council of Tulsa and my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.